أفقم سيد مرتزا and سيد محسن. سيد محسن, السلام عليكم, welcome to the show.
عليكم السلام ورحمة الله, thanks for inviting.
And سيد مرتزا, السلام عليكم brother.
Good morning, thank you very much.
So today when you look at the media all around the world, a type of harsh, violent, barbaric picture is made out of the religion of Islam, especially with the creation of such groups like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and the suicide bombing, you know, here and there. Especially the people in the West has a wrong view regarding the religion of Islam and the true teachings of Islam. Today we want to talk about this topic, how the religion of Islam can help international bodies to establish peace all around the world. Said Mursal, let's start with you, brother. Islam is really a peaceful religion, isn't it?
Well, thank you very much. If you look at the word Islam itself, it has its deep root in peace and comfort. So these days we know that peacekeeping is a very essential and important part of everybody's life. I mean, the whole humanity needs to take refuge to peacekeeping. Otherwise, the same skirmish that we can see around the world is happening.
That's right.
And unfortunately, conflict and fights have taken over, you know, to many parts of the world, even very small communities around the world. So unfortunately, some biased medias are trying to instill this wrong idea that religious conflict is the root of all these problems around the world. And we know that it has become a very important issue these days.
Okay.
So the religion of Islam is very much interested and even is trying to disseminate this true ideology that peace and religion are together. So any religion who's trying to propagate conflict, discomfort and problems is not actually a true religion. So
that's right.
Islam is telling us that peacekeeping or keeping peace among all humanity is very essential and is necessary.
Okay, and there have been so many conversions to the religion of Islam because of the peace that it brings into the society and also at the individual mental level. You know, the people who has converted, when you ask them, one of the reasons is this tranquility, calmness, and peace of mind that it brings to you. This is one individual aspect, but when you look at the societal, social, collective aspect, you can find also this kind of peace. Sayyid Mohsen, what's your comment on that, brother?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, first of all, we should know that that the religion has a strong influence on the people.
Yes.
In belief and in their faith. So, and we know that the people, they cannot live without having a belief or faith. Even the atheists do have a belief on which they obviously rely. Therefore, we see different religions in the world and we see people divided into different religions. But the Islam, as brother has said in its name, it has the word peace itself.
Yes.
And according to one meaning, we refer to the religion of peace. Therefore, Islam has a big contribution in order to make a peace. And obviously, it depends whether we follow the Islam in its true way or not. Because everything has two kinds of use. It can be used properly or it can be misused. So when we talk about the religion of Islam and its contribution towards the peace in the world, we can see that the Islam is the complete version of all the religions.
Okay.
And it has everything within it. And because it's the final religion, we can say like from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Therefore, it also refers to the peace as well. And on top of that, we, the slogans even in the Quran and that are given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, these are not general or general slogans. For example, when he talks about his prophet, he wants to introduce his prophet, he says he's Rahmatul Lil Alameen.
Yes.
He's the mercy for all the worlds. So the one who's mercy for all the worlds means that he is the bringer of peace to all the worlds, basically.
That's right.
So when we talk about the worlds, obviously it's different states.
Okay.
So we can say like Islam has a big contribution if we really follow the true Islam.
That's right.
Because nowadays the problem is that the enemies are propagating against Islam and people do not know the real source of the Islam.
That's right. But say, Murtaza, there are still some doubts and questions regarding the misunderstanding out of the religion of Islam, because the extremist groups who are really the pioneers of showing a kind of violent, barbaric picture of Islam to the world, refer to the same text of the Holy Quran that calls Prophet Muhammad as Rahmatul Alameen. But they understood it in this way to kill here and there, to commit suicide, you know, and such, you know, violent actions that are every day shown on the Western media, on the news, you know, here and there. You can find, you know, so many clips, video clips, the audios here and there. And that's why even some of the scholars of religions in the world at the universities believe that these violent things are based on the very text of the Quran and the context in which Islam was created. What's your answer to that?
Well, actually, let's look at the wrong misinterpretation of some verses of the Holy Quran. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, some people that you call them scholars, they have their own interpretations, which has no actually base and roots in Islamic principles and ideologies. And unfortunately, we have this idea that the religious leaders who have a very crucial role in bringing peace into communities, I think it's highly important to know, and it's really good to know that we all have a very important task to establish peace mm-hmm. among all communities. This part has been forgotten by these people, that they are just by name scholars.
Okay.
And unfortunately, they are not very much involved in interpreting the true aspects of some verses of the Holy Quran.
Okay.
So these pictures that have been broadcasted around the world are just coming from those interpretations that are not true. So if, on the other hand, we have another downside of this issue, that many scholars do not get themselves involved in providing the true interpretation of those verses and give them the information and give such information to those who are going to fight in order to bring peace, not to bring conflicts.
That's right.
So some fighting is not all about creating conflicts. People sometimes are dragged into fighting. I can call them not fight jihad because they want to bring peace. Unfortunately, this is not being interpreted correctly.
That's right. This interpretation of the verses of the Quran, and the thing is that they delete some part and they add some part to the verses of the Holy Quran. The context in which that verse was revealed is not known to them. And if you look at the history and how much the religion of Islam could help establishing peace among the families and the societies on the Arab Peninsula at the time of Prophet Muhammad, you know, it would be really beautiful from the side of the scholars. But Sayyid Mohsen, still, as I said, there are some commentaries written on the verses of the Holy Quran and the incidents, especially after the demise of the Prophet Muhammad, about the wars that took place by the Muslim leaders and the kings here and there in different lands of the societies, show that maybe Islam was spread by sword and not words. What's your answer to that, brother?
Well, the problem started right after the demise of the Prophet.
Okay.
And for your previous and the recent question which you asked, for both of them, the answer is that the main root of this diversion and this extremism that which we see in today's world, it's because right after the demise of Prophet, there were some people who said, Hasbuna kitab Allah. The book of Allah is enough for us.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the book of Allah brings the overall or general rules and the detailed rules, and the details are in the life of the Prophet, in the narrations of the Prophet. So when they left the sunnah of the Prophet and the narrations of the Prophet, and they just attached, and they got the book only,
yes,
which they couldn't even understand, because the book of Allah, Quran, has in its verses, there are some hidden meanings.
Yes.
There are some clear wordings. There are some mutashabih, there are some similar things which are said. There are some clear,
the muhkamat, mutashabihat
have different meanings, obviously, as well. But obviously, there is nasakh and mansukh. There was a rule, and later by the Prophet, it was overruled, and then the new rule came. So when we look at the Quran, it has different aspects. Mm-hmm. In order to understand the Quran, we need to refer back to the history of the revelation.
That's right.
Why this verse was revealed upon the Prophet, because of whom, what happened, who did what, so that the Prophet has said this, or Allah has revealed the verses. So when they left all these things, these details, and they just got the book on its own without the teacher, without the explanation which was given by the Prophet, we can see all those issues that happened into the Islam. And the picture today that we have, that Islam is spread by the sword, this was never happened in the life of Prophet.
Yes.
Prophet never invaded any place.
Yes.
Rather, the battles which he had, it was in defense of Islam. He was defending the Muslims.
Yes.
And at that time, yes, it is true that it was out of the Medina. Why? Because at that time, whenever there used to be a battle, they used to go at a common place.
That's all right.
Which was in the middle of like two countries or two places.
Okay.
So this was the reason, basically. So the main reason is when some people left the sayings of the Prophet, Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salam, which were obviously Allah has also emphasized on this. And the Prophet also said, I'm leaving amongst you two things, the Quran and Ahlul Bayt. So when they just got the Quran and they left Ahlul Bayt, they left the sayings of the Prophet narrations, the explanations about the verses. That's what happens generally.
Okay.
And this wrong picture that today we have is because of leaving the explanations given by the Prophet.
And the Ahlul Bayt also as the true exegesis of the Holy Quran. But in the 21st century, still after 14 centuries, after the relation of the Holy Quran to Prophet Muhammad and Islam, how do you think, Sayyid Murtaza, Islam and its teachings, its true teachings, I would like to very much use this term, pure Muhammadan Islam's teachings, you know, can help international bodies like these different international bodies that are working for peace, you know? Whenever you look at the main slogans and the mottos of these organizations, you can find peace. How Islam can help them in today's world?
You know, let's look at this question from another point of view.
Okay.
So all religions, including the religion of Islam, to some extent came and it was descended to prophets to bring peace and bring nations together. So it is a duty we all have. And this has been bestowed upon us, that we must work very hard to teach and influence on each and every community on the earth in order to live a peaceful life and to be a follower of this peaceful life. So the religion of Islam has put a great emphasis on this aspect.
Okay.
And if you can see, wherever we have gatherings, meetings, the first thing that is been mentioned by the speakers and those leaders, especially religious leaders, is the unity.
Yes.
So when we talk about unity and the united nation, so it means that Islam is putting its greatest slogan and mottos on unity. So unity is not happening without understanding, without mutual understanding, especially about religious matters.
That's right.
So the religion of Islam is focusing on similarities.
That's right.
The differences are not going to be given the first priority.
Okay.
So similarities bring people together.
Right.
So this aspect is the one that Islam has been propagated and has been talked about this matter over centuries.
That's all right. Especially as you said, reaching a kind of common ground among the Islamic leaders between themselves and also the leaders of the other religious communities and being united is a really important one. You know, the meetings that are happening today and the dialogue, both interfaith and intrafaith dialogues that are taking place and established in today's world show that all religious leaders are after making this peace in the world and not the conflict. But unfortunately, this media and the power of the media is showing it the way around.
And of course, you know that we need to work in order to build relationships.
Yes.
And relations of trust, with other religions.
Yes.
And this is what Islam has been always doing. You know, over the past centuries, we had our infallible imams, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And on top of all, we have the Book of Islam, Quran, is telling us and its followers that a amicable relationship with other religions and with other followers of the other religions is really of a great importance.
That's all right.
So this shows that Islam has already said clearly that peace with and to other nations and anyone is very important.
That's all right. Sayyid Mohsen, thank you very much, brothers, for your presence in the program. Viewpoints regarding how the religion of Islam can establish peace in today's world. It was very kind of you. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, view our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parsetoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye. A symphony of nature. Oh, it's taking my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Being the second largest country in the Middle East, Iran is rich with a colorful bouquet of architectural masterpieces, magnificent mosques, ancient caravanserais, impressive rock tombs, and former royal cities of the ancient Persian Empire. But perhaps Iran's amazing desert landscape has been largely overlooked. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Iran's deserts are unique in the variety of their composition and surface types. A yardang, or kalut, as they're called in Farsi, is a topographical feature that has been carved out of a surface by the wind. They're most commonly found in deserts where there is a sand supply, which abrades the surface when moved by the wind, and soft sedimentary rocks that the sand easily erodes. Over time, the sand wears down the surface into beautiful streamlined shapes that are aligned with the prevailing sand-moving winds. Iran is famous for mega yardangs in Kerman in the south of the country. Stay with us for this episode of Iran Trotter as we follow Javad to discover the spectacular kaluts in Iran.
Thank you. To most humans, nature means trees, jungles, rivers, and mountains. But is that all there is to this beautiful nature created by the architect of all beauties? God is limitless. He is infinite and has created nature with infinite beauties. Nature has many and varied complicated aspects, and the natural world in Iran is no exception. Many people do not consider deserts and wastelands as part of nature. But the fact is, deserts constitute a large part of the environment on our planet. All we have to do is open our eyes and look at these countless, peerless beauties. Hi, I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm traveling to the most pristine areas of my beloved country and uncovering to you its many beauties. This time, I've come to a vast city in Kerman province, a city that in fact forms a major swath of the amazing landscape in Kerman. The fictitious city of Kalutz. I set out on a 110-kilometer walking journey to the northeast of Kerman province to arrive at my main destination. The Yardangs are located in an area spanning 11,000 square kilometers in the west of Iran's Lut Desert. The Yardangs of Lut cover an area around 150 kilometers long and around 70 kilometers wide. In the words of some researchers, this vast expanse used to be the bed of a lake sometime in the third geological period, and that in fact the Yardangs, or the Kaluts, are made up of brittle sediments lying at the bottom of that lake. At some point in the third geological period, the lake dried up as a result of the major climatic changes that occurred on Earth. Torrential rains and their ensuing humidity in the following periods and water erosion led to the creation of the Kaluts, or Yardangs. Other researchers believe the Yardangs are the result of the alluvial deposits originating from Birjan Mountains in the distant past. Sharp temperature fluctuations in the Lut and the constant blowing of local winds carrying abrasive sediment loads of sandstones battering these Yardangs over the years have led to their erosion. Winds that continue to lash out at these Yardangs and eventually raise beautiful clay terraces to the ground. Trips to the heart of deserts and wastelands have always been risky, but studying up on such places and the risks involved in traveling to them, not to mention carrying a proper map, a GPS device, and the topographic map of the area you are traveling to, can bring the number of risks involved down to a great extent. In all fairness, one of the most beautiful areas in the Lut Desert is the Shahdad Yardangs of Kerman. I mean, there are few places in the world with such beautiful desert landscape. I think nowhere in the world can you find a landscape as vast as this one. I am in the Lut Yardangs, hoping for a good trip, and I'm positive it's gonna be a thrill.
Thank you.
I stepped onto a part of the river that not many people were interested in traveling to for several reasons. The flight distance between the Yardangs and the Yalan Megadunes in the west of Lut is around 150 kilometers. For several consecutive years, part of the Yalan Megadunes was announced by NASA as one of the hottest spots on Earth. This is an area where temperatures run above 70 degrees in the summer. With no trace of life among them, the Yardangs of Lut look scary to human eyes. Although in recent years, some researchers have discovered and registered a number of plants and insect species in them. But at first look, the fictional town of Kalutz or Yardangs bears no trace of life of any kind. Encountering sandstorms in the desert or getting lost in them, or all the other hidden dangers of such terrains, can put your life at grave risk. But none of those reasons stop me from walking right into the Yardangs. You can enjoy spending time in this beautiful natural landscape with enough information on its climate and terrain, and by using a map and GPS device. No one has found any trace of human habitation in the Kalutz area, not in the past and not in the present eras. But on the outskirts of these beautiful Kalutz, there are many remnants of human habitation from years gone by. The Kalutz are located on the outskirts of Shahdad, a city in Kerman that is among the most ancient in Iran, a place with a more than 6,000-year-old culture and history. The world's oldest metal flag was discovered here. The many qanats and water reservoirs on the outskirts of the Kalutz, as well as the lush gardens of Shahdad, are evidence of human settlement in the distant past. Right at the beginning of the route, I came across an area with a concentration of strange Kalut formations, a place famous for its egg-shaped hills. I have to walk a long distance to get to the heart of the Shahdad Kalutz, but the beautiful elevations you see behind me, which is sort of the prelude to the main Kalutz, are called the egg-shaped hills, and for good reason. They really do look like eggs, although these hills are considered as little Kalutz. The reason they've been abraded more than the other Kalutz in this region is rainfalls and, of course, the type of soil they are made from. And if it goes on like this, rainwater and wind are going to destroy them in the not-too-distant future. Every spot you go to in this region, you see new and different Kalutz or Yardangs. The majority of those who travel to the Kalutz are not aware of the diversity of the landscapes in this terrain and its natural phenomena. But the fact is, the Kalutz of Kerman are a peerless kaleidoscope of beautiful desert landscapes. Everywhere you look in this region, you see spectacular yet peculiar sights. Around 7 kilometers after the egg-shaped hills, I arrived at another strange yet interesting scenery. From a distance, I thought I was approaching some prehistoric cemetery. But well, this is not a cemetery. These mounds you see here are called the Dolphin Hills. In fact, they are very small kalutz in the vicinity of the big ones. The dual action of wind abrasion and rainwater has chiseled them to look like dolphins swimming on a wave of dust and sand. Every part of the kalutz in Shahdad has its own unique shape. and these dolphin hills are among those unique parts of the Shahdad Khalutz. These are really extraordinary, really beautiful. I've been walking around in the Shahdad Khalutz for hours now, deep into the heart of these remarkable protuberances. Although it is fall now, and the best season to travel to the Lut Desert, and of course to the Shahdad Khalutz, early spring is also a good time. Anyway, it's noontime and very hot. It was very cold in the morning, but now the temperature keeps going up, so I'm going to have to take a layer off. The temperature in the desert fluctuates sharply between the morning and the evening. It's always like that. So you have to remember to pack the right clothes for summer and winter weather. That's what it's like in the desert. You get summer and winter weather at the same time, happening within hours of each other on a single day. You should keep that in mind. It's really getting hot here. I just hope it'll stop right there as we approach noontime. Because, I mean, the sun, the heat from the sun can just be unbearable. Although I've already thought of something for a situation like this, one of the most important things we have to carry with us when traveling through deserts and wastelands are glasses, sunglasses that is. They're very important to protecting your eyes against the scorching sun. When the rays of the sun reach the dirt, they are reflected in your direction and bother your eyes. The air here is very clean. That's why there's so much light. So you have to wear sunglasses if you ever come to a place like this. If you don't, your vision is going to get hurt and you're going to get wrinkles around your eyes. And that's what the ladies are very sensitive about. The dazzling beauties of the Khalutz redoubled my enthusiasm for traveling into the heart of these sand formations. But the deeper I walked into them, the more arduous things became. Walking on the sand in the punishing heat requires strenuous effort and drains your energy. The day started out cold, but the temperatures kept going up as I approached midday. The biting autumn cold was nowhere to be felt. Walking on the sand and grit really wears you out after a while. And it makes you sweat a lot, too. It's starting to get really hot. I better change into something more suitable. I'm wearing a thin layer, but the short sleeves expose my forearms to the sun, and that means sunburn. The sun is just bearing down on me. I feel like it's burning my face. I mean, I really had to change my clothes to avoid getting sunburn on my arms. The sun can get really annoying round about noontime out in the desert, even if it's not very hot. You're bound to get sunburned. So you must wear long-sleeved shirts with good breathability at the same time. I mean, that's what I always do. And I've never run into any problems because long sleeves have always protected my arms against the sun. Now, more important than wearing long-sleeved shirts out in the desert is to have proper headgear, such as this hat. What this hat does is it prevents the radiation from the sun from reaching your head to a great extent, and as a result, your face, neck, and ears won't get burnt. It really feels good when you wear one of these. And of course, a good pair of sunglasses is a must-have in a place like this. But there is another type of glasses, sunglasses, that I carry with me all the time. These are called storm goggles by some and skiing goggles by others. It's important to pack a pair of these goggles too, because when there is a sandstorm, when strong winds start blowing, they kick up a lot of sand and other particles into the air, and these goggles prevent them from going into your eyes. More important than that, you can see where you're going when you're out in the sticks without worrying about sand getting into your eyes. Man, I'm beat. It really wears you out when you walk on sand and up and down on those little hills. It's just fatiguing. I dare say, walking about in the Kalutz area and the hot areas of Lut Desert in the summer is next to impossible. The temperatures are so high and the surface of the earth so hot, you won't last more than a few kilometers. That's a time when you cannot see any living creatures in the Lut Desert. You can only see them during the night. It's very important to carry enough water when you travel to a place like this. If you're going to spend 2, 3, or 4 days trekking in the desert, make sure you have enough water. That's because you sweat a lot and your body loses a lot of water. And obviously, when that happens, you become dehydrated. In addition to that, you have to eat food that contains salt. But if your food doesn't contain enough salt, you need to eat salty nuts. That's because your body loses a lot of sodium as you sweat in the heat, and that's going to harm your body. Okay, now let's eat an orange. The Kalutz expand intermittently from the west of the Lut Desert towards the southeast. The corridors formed among them look in the same direction as the Kalutz themselves, that is, in the direction of the local winds. They are all very brittle. The shape of each Kalut depends on how it was first formed, its density, and the direction of the winds that brush against it on their paths. Shifting winds and other erosive factors in the Kalut's basin has created a variety of them with different shapes and sizes. In some places, winds have filled the depression around the Kalut's with sand, and in other places, they have blown away the sand from around them. Now, let's take a look at the etymology of the word Kalut. Kalut is a blend of two words, Kal and Lut. Together, they mean the city of Lut. In the Khorasan region, in central Iran and along the coast of the Caspian Sea, the word Kal has taken on different meanings. In Khorasan and Sistan and Baluchistan, it's the root of words such as kalate and kalat, meaning castle or citadel. It could also mean a hamlet or a village perched on an elevation. In the center of Iran, the word kalat means a walled-off village. The Kaluts are an imaginary city. From a distance, they look like the remains of a ruined city. Of course, there are a few other areas like this in some parts of the world, but the Kalutz of Iran cover the largest such area in the world. Without human interference and technology, Mother Nature has put on display her unique artistic talent and creativity. It was starting to get dark when, on a nature trip, it's important that the nature traveler find the right spot where they can pitch their tent before the dark sets in. That will ensure a good night's rest without any trouble. I'm going to call it a day now, and I think the best place for me to camp out is right here next to a lone Kalut surrounded by sand. The wind has created this hole here as if to prepare it for someone to set up their tent in it. This is perfect because here I'll have my back to the wind, which usually blows from the heights of Siyuj Mountains back there towards the Kalutz. I mean, that's why this hole has been created. This Kalut hasn't allowed sand to accumulate here, hence the evenly shaped depression around it. It's just the perfect place to camp out. We're spending the night here. It's a great spot, and hopefully we're going to have a star-studded sky above us.
Okay,
I've been told I wouldn't be able to find any firewood or shrubs or any living creatures because deep in the heart of the Kaluts, the winds are so strong they won't allow any vegetation to grow on their path. In other words, if a plant grows here, it gets blown away by the wind. But there is an exception to that rule, and that is an area located on the path of floodwaters flowing down to the Kaluts area from the Ravar Mountains. The floods uproot the shrubs on the banks of the rivers nearby, the ones near the Kaluts that is, and dump them in the seasonal river that's created near here, and eventually brings them over to the Kaluts area. I might be able to find something there to make a fire here tonight to keep me and others warm. The temperatures in the Lut Desert fluctuate constantly, making life a bit difficult for nature travelers. Therefore, I always pack warm clothes and a good warm sleeping bag. Another beauty of the desert is its star-studded night sky. In the absence of light pollution, you get a clear view of the twinkling stars and part of the Milky Way. You can spend hours feasting your eyes on those beautiful celestial bodies that adorn the expansive firmament above. I'm glad I found these sticks. It gets really cold out here at night. I rarely make fire during my trips because I set a lot of store by nature and even dry sticks of wood. These sticks are a form of energy. They are no different than oil and gas, so we shouldn't use them recklessly. As I say, I don't make fire when I camp out unless I really have to. Most of the time, I don't need to. And when I do, I make a small one. But in the Lut Desert and in the Shahdad Desert, temperatures fluctuate a lot. I remember coming here 3 years ago. One night, winter was about to come to an end. I mean, like 2 or 3 days to the end of the season, 3 years ago. That night, right here in the Lut Desert, the temperature plunged to -1 degrees. Here's the thing. In the day, at midday I mean, I had traveled deeper into this area and experienced temperatures as high as 43 degrees. That's a huge difference in one single day. It was all very strange to me. But well, that's what deserts are like. It's typical of them. It can get really cold during the night, especially during fall and winter. Therefore, you have to have proper clothes to wear, and if you manage to find a few sticks, you can keep yourself warm and enjoy yourself sitting around a campfire.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting? The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Light. Color, beauty and entertainment. The French city of Nice hosts a dazzling and flashy event. The so-called Battle of the Flowers took place on Saturday. Performers on top of animal-themed floats waved at the crowd and threw flowers at the audience while musicians played live. Each of the 16 floats was decorated with around 3,000 flowers. Also, thousands of people attended the event. The Battle of the Flowers is part of the carnival in Nice, which has been held annually for almost 150 years. An endangered Mediterranean monk seal has embarked on a new solo adventure after spending months under the care of conservationists. Four-month-old Evie was released back into the wild on February 15th in northern Greece. Evie was rescued when she was only 7 days old. She had been washed ashore and separated from her nursing mother during a storm. However, conservationists found the lucky seal and started taking care of her. Even though Evie's health was poor, she recuperated quickly.
She was really dehydrated in the beginning, which is very common with pups that separate from their mothers at such an early age. And the first few weeks were critical for her health because there's basically no way to replenish, like to replace the mother's milk. So we have a certain protocol and a food regimen that we provide along with vitamins and other supplements to the seal. And thankfully, in the first few weeks, she showed signs of her health status became better.
The conservationists hope Evie will be able to join a community of her species soon. They will be tracking her movements with a chip. There are only a few hundred Mediterranean monk seals left in the wild. About half of them live in Greece. Entrapment from fishing, pollution, depletion of food resources, and climate change are some of the threats facing the species.
History shows a gun barrel never stops people from acquiring their learning tools. A bookshop in the besieged Gaza Strip is a testimony as book lovers flooded the store months after it was flattened in an Israeli airstrike. The new Samir Mansour bookshop, funded by an international donor campaign, now stands some 200 meters from its original site. It was destroyed by an Israeli airstrike on the west of Gaza City last year. The new shop is spread across two floors and is stocked with some 400,000 books. They range from school texts to the Quran to Arabic translations of European literary classics. Hundreds of people, including writers and Palestinian officials, attended the bookshop's reopening. The store first opened its doors 30 years ago and is considered the oldest and the biggest in Gaza.
The City of London usually welcomes arts and culture from all over the world, including Iran. In our next report, Bianca Rahimi will be taking us to a performance that fuses music from across the East.
A dream has become a reality. The Conference of the Birds, composed by the brilliant young musician Mehsan Marvasti and inspired by a poem of the same name written by poet Attar of Nishapur in the 12th century, performed here in London. It's a story all Iranians are familiar with, about an epic journey to find the Simurgh.
The Simurgh is to the east what the phoenix is to the west, a mythical creature that symbolizes transformation. And the story of the Simurgh is a spiritual one, full of courage, determination, and self-discovery.
Well, I think it's the first time I've seen so prominently advertised a non-Western musical traditional concert. And I've got a long-standing interest in music from the different parts of the Islamic world. It kind of evokes sort of deeper feelings, spiritual feelings. And the fact that this specific concert is about kind of a spiritual poem, it taps into something which I think a lot of us are looking for, especially in this post-pandemic, current pandemic situation. We're looking for some deeper meanings. So I think it will be striking a chord for a lot of people.
It's a mix of fusion of different music, and that's always interesting. And it's Eurasian music, and it uses different instruments from across Asia to represent birds, and it just sounded lovely.
Even though there are differences, cultural differences between these places and these peoples, and those differences should be recognised in general, but through things like music and art, there can also be synergy, and things can work together as well.
5 years in the making, the Conference of the Birds, conducted by Farnoush Behzad, brought together musicians and instruments from across the world. It fuses Azeri, Chinese, Indian, Arabic, Afghan, Armenian and Persian music, brought to the audience by a Western orchestra. The performance was accompanied by two elocutionists who narrated the story and animated clips of birds and their migratory lives. The art and culture of Iran needs no introduction, renowned worldwide. But young Iranian artists living far from home are always looking for ways to capture the spirit of their homeland and offer Western audiences a taste of Iran. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Axolotls are unique Mexican amphibians at risk of extinction, and many conservation programs are now trying to save these strange-looking animals. An ecological park in Mexico City is the latest place to celebrate them. It has held a ceremony for releasing baby axolotls into their natural habitat, which is the mud. These amphibians are so special that even a number of city officials attended the event. Conservationists say having a clean environment is key to their survival.
I've managed to breed up to 22,000 axolotls. In all of Xochimilco, there are 90 axolotls across 90 kilometers, but the quality of the axolotls depends on the quality of biologist you are. Bad quality water has killed anywhere from 12,000 to 15,000.
Researchers have discovered that axolotls can absorb oxygen from the surface of their skin and are therefore more vulnerable to dirty water and environments. More than 70 breeding centers across Mexico have joined the rally of saving these critically endangered species. Many are even marketing them as ideal pets, but to animal advocates, keeping axolotls as pets is a definite no-no.
Now, for those who are interested in archaeology, the remains of 14 mummies have been unearthed at an ancient site in central Peru. The mummies, believed to be over 1,000 years old, include 6 children and 8 adults. The tomb containing the bodies was found at an archaeological complex about 25 kilometers from the capital, Lima. Researchers discovered other objects such as clay pots, decorated calabashes, and some knitting gears near the mummies. They believe the children and adults were sacrificed in honor of a prominent local figure whose mummified body was found last November in the same area. Van Dalen says the discovery provides them with the oldest evidence of child sacrifice associated with the burial of an elite character in the pre-Inca era. The city of Cajamarquia, which was built out of mud in around 200 BC, is considered as one of the largest archaeological complexes in Peru.
A miniature bull in Germany's Bavaria is proving that size does not matter, as the small bovine makes himself comfortable in his new herd at an animal sanctuary. This tiny bull had a lucky escape and was rescued from a farmer who was taking him to a slaughterhouse. The mini cow is named Napoleon and was born with a genetic defect. Just 8 months old, the diminutive bull has already reached his full size. Napoleon might be small, but he is mighty and daring, as he is not afraid of joining a herd consisting of big and huge animals.
Napoleon belongs to the Dexter breed, which produces rather small cattle anyway. They grow up to be about 1.2 meters. With his 80 centimeters, he's of course far below that. Despite his size, he feels like a complete bull and is in a good mood. He has settled in with us very quickly, which we are very happy about. He also has a lively effect on the herd.
The little bovine now lives with 100 other rescued livestock. His rescuers say he gets along with other animals and has already become friendly with another rescued cow. The Dexter is a breed of cattle first originated in Ireland. They are usually bred for high-quality meat and milk. An Indonesian man frees a crocodile of a tire that was stuck around its neck some 6 years ago. Tilly, a self-taught rescuer and resident of central Sulawesi province, captured the reptile and cut the tie using a small saw with the help of some locals. The animal had been too smart to be trapped. Tilly says he had been tracking the reptile for weeks using a basic trap with a rope tied to a log. He used live chickens and dogs as bait to lure the reptile. The crocodile drew the sympathy of local residents who worried the tire would choke as it grows in size. Tilly says his main motive was to help animals, claiming it was not his first experience dealing with a crocodile.
Biologists in Peru release two birds back to their natural habitat after weeks of efforts to attend and conserve dozens of animals affected by an oil spill. Two birds were among some 200 animals found dehydrated and were brought to a veterinary hospital for treatment. Veterinarians, biologists, and volunteers have been leading the cleanup operation of the affected coast close to the capital, Lima. So far, several species have been released after rehabilitation. An oil tanker off the coast of Peru was hit by waves triggered by a volcanic eruption miles away in Tunga in January. Some 6,000 barrels of oil spilled into the ocean that polluted waters and beaches along Peru's Pacific coast.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.